Welcome to 239 Uncensored. Everything Southwest Florida and beyond with your host, Tim Jarrett. This podcast covers it all. Real talk on issues from real estate to real crime. Join the discussion on hot topics to politics. Don't get left behind. Be in the know about everything Southwest Florida and beyond.
Welcome, welcome, 239 Uncensored, and in the studio today, hey, we got Rich Hampton. He was able to make it over to the studio, which is always a good thing. Rich?
Absolutely. How you doing, bud?
Doing good. Hey, you know what? This weekend's been great. A lot of things accomplished. Getting ready for my trip out of town. It's been good. It's been good. How about you?
Awesome. Spent a great day on the boat. Reminded me of the old days yesterday. Caught a couple fish. Got a little sunburnt, but enjoying Naples for all it's worth.
Naples is great, especially this time of year. I'm waiting for it to cool down just a little bit, though. It's getting a little bit hot.
My goodness, that a little hot is an understatement. You walk out and you get hit in the face. It's crazy with the heat and the humidity.
Oh, it is. It is a little bit nuts. You know, one thing though, I got to mention, and we probably won't get this out tonight, but this week school starts, and we really need to make sure kids are safe.
Thank goodness school's starting and we're getting these rugrats back out of the house into some sort of environment, getting off these Fortnite systems and going to have them socialize and be normal kids again. It's going to be great.
Well, you know, them home playing games and computer and stuff like that, how's that working out for you?
I'd rather not even get into that right now. But I do look forward to Logan getting back to some normalcy. I don't know what level he's at with Fortnite, but I'm pretty sure he's won the battle royales all summer.
Oh, yeah. Great job parenting. Get on there and just play. Have a good time. Call me when you're finished. Check in. All right, Rich, you know, we have a tendency to talk about Fort Myers, mostly about Naples. I know you grew up on Marco. We have a lot of listeners on Marco Island. I'm able to see actually a little bit of our stats and things like that. So, you know, kind of just tell me what it was like growing on Marco and how did you get to Marco?
Oh, man, great. I mean, just great memories. My mom moved us here in the late 70s. We lived, everybody that's from Marco will know where Marco Lake Drive is. My entire family was involved in either commercial fishing, stone crabs, grouper, a lot of mullet fishermen, and or the restaurant business. Very different from what I was used to as a young kid in Kansas City, moving to an environment like Marco Island, where you walked barefooted all day. You didn't really give, parents didn't even think twice about letting kids go fishing at 9, 10 years old with little to no supervision. It was heaven for a young kid, man. I can tell you there's memories that are very near and dear to my heart that unfortunately I don't think that people who move here today understand how beautiful of a place Marco Island was back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, I remember that show. It's Flipper. Do you remember the show Flipper?
Oh, yeah.
Was it kind of like that where, you know, you got dolphins in the backyard and you used to go out and, you know, run around in your little boats and things like that? Was it similar?
There was a lot of boats and there was a lot of DEA agents. And the joke in our family is, you know, you either decided that you want to do commercial fishing or go in work for and in law enforcement and because or in government. A lot of the commercial fishermen went to quote unquote college for 3 to 5 years. I think you know where I'm going with that. The group of troopers got them.
They were gone for a few years and the family didn't really know where they were. I understand. So what were some of the cool stories? I remember a story that you told me back when you were young, and I think it was Bill Hanna, a couple other police officers got you. And you told me that, listen, if they didn't intervene at that time, you might have gone the wrong way.
I will tell you. So when I look back to some of my heroes, mentors, you know, and as law enforcement officers, you don't think that maybe, just maybe, someday some kid's going to look up to you. I remember Terry Shea. He was basically the mayor of Marco. You know, he would spend the time to pull over, talk to kids, see what they were up to. We were 12 or 13 years old, and we could be a little mischievous. I remember a kid named Scott Squares. I don't know if you remember Squares Nursery. Jenny and Scott are still here in town. But Scott Squares, Mark Morgan, our whole neighborhood of kids who are still here today, I think if they hear this, they're going to laugh a little. We decided it was a good idea after driving by the Marco, there's a little hotel right on Marco Lake Drive, and they were renovating it and replacing the washers and dryers. So I think it was Scott's great idea. Let's take these washers and dryers and build ramps into the lake. Okay, so we followed suit. Scott was a little older than us, so we did kind of, we followed Scott around. Well, jumping into this lake, we didn't realize it till Terry Shea pulled up that this lake per capita had more gators in it than any lake in all of Collier County. And what's funny about it is we could care less, right? You only know what you know. But I look back at that and I think, you know, yeah, it was dangerous. Yeah, it was stupid. But that's symbolic of growing up on Marcos, riding your three-wheeler literally from one end of the island to the other, out to Goodland, going fishing at O'Shea's on the back docks where the commercial boats parked, going to Moraney's Fish House in Isles of Capri when we were mullet fishing for, you know, 3 and 4 days straight, kid named Mark Morgan and I. And a lot of people know this, Cape Romano. You've been out there, Ted.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the history of Cape Romano is deep in my family. My aunt and uncle actually got married on that dock. I've got the powder blue tuxedo.
Oh, yeah, you still got it.
I do. Well, I think I was 7 at the time at the end of the dock while they got married there at Kersey's Cabin, which is right there on that front wall to Cape Romano. And then as teenagers, we would camp out there for 3 and 4 days. And the folks that lived on the inn there, there's an A-frame house, and then everybody sees the Igloo House now, right? And that's right, a big landmark. Right. But that wasn't even there when I was a kid. It was an A-frame house where the family had peacocks, horses, and emus.
On the island.
On the island. So emus, or most people would know them as an ostrich, they'd walk down up and down that beach, and they became very friendly to people. Well, nothing like turning around seeing a 6-foot emu in your face, right? But that's how, I mean, that was Marco, that was Goodland. It was just and I believe the girl that lived in that house, and one of my friends will have to correct me, I'm sure they will. She used to take her little Boston Whaler, like a 14-foot Boston Whaler, and ride that boat, or drive that boat from Cape Romano to Caxambas every morning to catch the bus to go to Golden Gate Middle School, which is where we bus to from Marco.
Unbelievable. That's a long cruise. That's at 20 miles right there.
Every morning, every night.
Unbelievable. Yeah, so, you know, I grew up in Maine, so we were, you know, fairly small town. We had 30, 40,000 people.
Bahaba.
Bahaba, close to Bahaba. And, you know, we did the same crazy shit. I mean, I remember, you know, we talked about it in past podcasts. You know, we'd jump all kinds of shit with our bike. I mean, with Mark Baker, we was talking about it. We'd make these bikes and had the sissy bars on them, and, you know, the higher the ramp, the better. My good friend Dan, we used to, it was just, well, game
you
on.
You know, I do have a picture of you, and you may have been a little older, but you had the tube socks pulled up to your knees.
Oh, yeah.
With the two bright stripes around them, cut off denim shorts with a, it wasn't even a tank top. I think it was a mid, girls would call that like a halter top.
Night Ranger.
Yeah, to show off your six pack, right?
All right, yeah.
With your mullet. I loved it, man. God, you're looking good, bro.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, and it's funny, I became a police officer after going in the military, but it wasn't something I thought about doing when I was a kid, because not that I was bad, but we used to kind of be a little bit devious on these motorcycles, and we used to have this one police officer, his name was John Roach. He was, quite frankly, he was an ass. I mean, I remember him very well, and he would stop us, you know, as a police officer, doing his job, which I understand.
Right.
But what he would do is, if you lived 4 houses down or if you lived 2 miles down, he would call a tow truck to come tow your motorcycle. So this guy would tow our motorcycles. And again, it was a $70 bill back then. If we even crossed the road, now we never got on the road and just, you know, get on it and just cruise for miles and miles. We would cross the road, he'd stop us, and he would tow our shit from location to 4 houses down. So, yeah, John Roach. I he's probably listening, but, you know, it's all good. Officer, yeah. John Roach.
That's one of those things. When you grow up, you know, you remember that guy. You're going to remember that guy. So you did, like me, you didn't really have the plan to go in the military. How did that come about?
Well, I worked at the hospital for while I was in high school. I was worked in the pharmacy, so I used to run around to different floors. Back then, there was no internet, so if a patient needed a prescription on a floor, I'd have to go to all the floors, circle, get a piece of paper, come down, fill the prescription, and I'd run it back. So I was a runner, and then I started like a knucklehead. I started at UPS, hardest job I've ever done. It was during Christmas, and the guy's like, oh, yeah, you make $8 an hour, and I'll tell you what, Rich.
Was that as a jumper? Did you guys, you call him jumper?
No, it was, I used to actually unload those big trucks.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. You put them on the rails and the guy would come in and he'd be like, Jarrett, you're behind two packages. He would actually time you for a minute and count how many packages I got.
That's
so
crazy.
I actually, one night I was on my way home from work at UPS and I'm like, I got to go in the military. I got to do something because I can't be doing these two jobs and I don't see a whole lot down the line. Had a chance to play a little football, but I kind of was one of those kids that wanted to wait a year to try to just take a break from high school. Like that was difficult.
Right.
And I hopped on the military train. That was it. That's all she wrote.
Yeah. No, I think our story's similar. You know, when I look back to the jobs I had growing up, Marco, between working as a bagger at Publix, convention setup at the Marco Island Marriott, of course, my entire upbringing, I was a commercial fisherman because I just jump on boat to boat. That's what our family did. We owned the Crabby Lady down on Marco and worked for the Arthurs on a grouper boat. I will tell you that I thought that was the hardest job you'd ever do is commercial fishing. But I made the mistake one summer of going with my buddy to work an underground utility gig.
Oh, shit.
So if you can imagine July, August, and part of September being in a 6-foot hole in Naples, Florida, putting grease around O-rings all day and then letting a backhoe smack you in the side just to get these storm drain and these sewer pipes put in for literally 11 and 12 hour days. That's when I knew, hey bud, you're going to have to get out of here and the military's right for you.
Yeah, up your game. But I did a little bit of everything. I actually sold popcorn, nothing else. Sold popcorn, sodas, popcorn, peanuts over here. I did all that stuff. So yeah, And actually, I was pretty damn good at that. So we used to sell sodas, popcorn. I used to mow the lawns at this big auditorium-type place, the Bangor Auditorium. I did all the setups, did all the dance floors, chairs, all that stuff. So you know exactly where we're coming from. But I think I started working when I was not allowed to, like 13 or 14.
I don't think child labor laws applied.
Yeah. I was given like $100 to work like a whole week or something. I don't know what
it was.
Those
Marco folks, they're going to remember Petrocelli's Pizza in the Marco Island Town Center. And that was my first job at 13 years old, washing dishes in the back. And I don't even know what I made, but it wasn't much.
Yeah, so things have changed. So now, you know, we talk about, you know, what kids are doing and kids are 21, 22, and I'm trying to help them get boosted. I mean, I had a kid on the way. I had a house already or at least an apartment. I had so many things going on, and some of these kids, you know, at the age that I'm dealing with them now, they don't really get all that piece.
No, they're Fortnite champions, bud.
Yeah, well, right? Yeah, they're good at it.
No, I think we were both kind of in a situation where we had to grow up a little quicker, right? I know I bought my first house for $67,000 in Central Golden Gate. I think that was 1995, you know, in the young 20s. Started at the sheriff's office, also 24, I think. So I don't know. And I don't know if that's generational or not, because we've got a lot of good, hardworking young Naples kids that are doing the same thing. They're going to the military. They're wanting to serve their community. So, but your point's well taken. You look at it and you go, okay, at what point do you start making the decision that you need a path, right? I mean, the military was our path. I'm not saying that's for everybody, but at some point you start having to make that decision.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the military. We've got a little bit of time to touch on that. How has it changed since we started? I mean, I know when I went there, I was in the Air Force. It wasn't real difficult. The first 2 weeks, I will tell you, when I first got there, I go, why the hell did I come here? But other than that, for the most part, it was the way to go. I mean, no doubt.
Yeah, both of us were in the Air Force. I actually did a small stint in the Army Guard. But
well, we passed our ASVAB, right. Unlike the Marines and the Army guys.
Correct. So, you know, we were issued pens and not crayons. We could go on and on with that. But no, and, you know, I think we both talked about why we wanted to go there, but and your question is, how has it changed? Well, I went into basic training in 1990. When'd you go?
I went back in 1986.
Yeah, you're a lot older than me.
Yeah. I looked so much younger. That's cool.
Don't ever forget that. But no, I mean, you're post-Vietnam. You know, I'm just I'm pre-Desert Storm. But no, I think it has changed a lot. You know, I mean, not just the requirements. I watched what Mason, my son, had to go through to get in the Air Force. And it was really strange, Tim. So, you know, I graduated from basic in 1990. And about 19 months ago, Mason graduated from the very exact same basic training base. And going back there, shit, 30 years later,
Yeah.
Holy smokes. It brought back some, you know, you think you can just get past and forget those basic training memories. They still haunt you, brother.
Oh, no. I remember those first 2 weeks. It was not fun. And you know what the bad thing is? When I went in, it was on a holiday weekend. So I get there on like a Thursday night. So I had Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then there was a holiday on Monday. And Tuesday, they started us off. Well, what do you think they got us doing on, you know, during that weekend?
Walls and walls, weeds and seeds, baby.
We're out with toothbrushes getting oil stains off the parking lot. Just total nonsense.
Very productive part of the Air Force. Just
trying to keep us busy and out of trouble for a couple days. And that was really not good.
Yeah, well, see, now I went in. I was a cop in the Air Force. I think you were you loaded bombs.
I was a bomb builder. I didn't actually put them on, but we stored them. Brought them out, nuclear weapons and conventional weapons. It's called 4601, 4601. That's a ammo troop.
They weren't going to trust me with building bombs, but I did guard planes and nuclear missile sites, which is a little scary. But, you know, I look back to when I went in, and now my son, who's in, he's in his going into his second year. He's a little smarter than us. He went air crew. He's a loadmaster now on the C-5 Galaxy. And I think in the short period of time he's been to, I don't know, a dozen different countries. Downranged Afghanistan, Iraq, Qatar. Of course, he did stop in Germany, your old stomping grounds, because I think you were stationed there.
Germany's great, right? Yes, K-Town. I was there. Yeah, I was at Hahn Air Base, just about an hour out of K-Town.
Okay, and K-Town is what?
Basically, at the time, K-Town was probably the largest military presence outside of the United States. I believe they had over 100,000 airmen, army, probably Marines and every other type of military there. It was massive. And it was pretty cool because they actually had restaurants that you did not have anywhere else in Germany that we had in the United States. They had Kentucky Fried Chicken, Burger King, McDonald's. And back then, that was like a really cool thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, seeing it firsthand of what Mason, his training requirements are a lot more rigorous, I think, than what ours were. I think these kids are a little smarter. I don't know if they work harder, but they're definitely smarter from an aptitude technology standpoint. Went through air crew school, went through tech school. And like I said, he's been traveling the world, which I'm super proud of him. But, you know, sometimes I have to reflect because it's easy for guys our generation to look back and say, these millennials or this new generation, they're lazy or they're not worth a damn. And I got to tell you, even in our agency, we're seeing a lot of guys return from the military to come back to protect their communities just like we want to do. And some of these kids are unbelievable.
Oh, they are. We knock them a little bit. We talk them about being Fortnite kings and all this stuff.
Right.
But the reality is these kids come back and they work smarter, not harder.
Right.
And the millennials truly come back from the military or, you know, even the ones around here that go back to school, they come back and they're really, they work a lot smarter. They ask questions. They want to know. You can't just always tell them, do this. They want to know why.
But they need to know why.
But you give them the explanation and for the most part, they go off and they do it fine.
They need the buy-in. But, you know, it's definitely a different military today. I tell you where I'm getting a lot of good exposure of seeing how dynamic our military is through the Take a Soldier Fishing program. And I know you had Steve Lloyd on here talking just about that.
Yeah, it's great. Take a Soldier Fishing, great program. You're on the board for Take a Soldier Fishing. And I know you got that coming up, and it's like a year-long thing. It's never really stops. You always have something coming up. But that's just impressive. Do you ever get a chance to just talk to these guys?
Oh, man, the stories. I'll just give you a quick one. So we created an award called the Press On Award, and this award is to be given to a military member who's faced significant adversity at some point in their military career, and they've risen to the occasion, and they've thrived in life beyond the military. And I think you got to meet him, a gentleman by the name of Ethan Colleen. You remember Ethan?
I do. I do remember talking to him.
So Ethan was a staff sergeant with, I believe he's the 1st Ranger Battalion. He's over in Katika Province. And their mission was to go and identify this terrorist cell. And it's a small compound of mud huts. That's how they described them, right? A village of mud huts. They arrive in, and Ethan's group was the QRF, or the Quick Reaction Force. And immediately, the mission started going south. A good friend of his was killed in the line of duty or killed in action. So they brought Ethan's team in. And, so Ethan decides that he's going to clear a house. And even though he's the NCOIC, or the sergeant in charge, the E5, he's going to lead this search. And he decides to go, you know, search this mud hut, as he called it. And there's certain tactics, as you know, that they use to do that. And these are Rangers, so they don't mess around. They get to one room, and they see a wheelbarrow upside down in the entryway of this room, which is very suspicious, right? So immediately his training tells him this is an IED or it's a booby trap, but he cannot not clear this room because failure to clear this room is going to cause more casualties potentially for his troops.
Right.
So he steps past this wheelbarrow and he starts running the wall. And as he starts running the wall, he feels before he hears a pressure in his leg, upper leg. And it was a round from a machine gunner who was at the, and it was on a turn, that's important to the story, started firing on Ethan. He took one to each arm, one to his leg, went down, and he took out the gunner. As he's laying on his back, he shoots and kills the gunner.
After he's been shot.
A second gunner comes and takes the machine gun. Ethan takes him out. He took out three, okay? While he's been almost, you know, he's got three rounds in him and his thumb's been blown off, okay? He's so close to the turret. The turret only goes so far up and so far down because it's a piece of machinery. You understand what I'm saying?
Right, yep.
It'll go left and right however you want it, but you can only go down so far with it. Ethan was underneath the effective range of this turret. So it shot his helmet off, but it kept him alive.
Unbelievable.
Okay. So he neutralizes three of them. They pull him out. He's got a tourniquet on his left arm, a tourniquet on his right arm. I believe he's got a tourniquet on every appendage. And he refuses to get in the bird until he's sure that all his troops are accounted for and safe.
That's a hero.
Dude, if you get a chance to shake a guy like that's hands, you see things differently, right? And so Ethan, not only does he survive that moment, okay, that's one of 10 engagements in the 1st Ranger Battalion. His first engagement in the 1st Ranger Battalion, his aircraft went down, the bird went down, and he continued. So they put him in a bird, a C-17. They do emergency surgery on his way to Germany. I think he got 14 surgeries, got his thumb sewn back on. He went out for another.
Kept going.
Can't stop. They assign him to the Pentagon. He's a war planner at the Pentagon. He decides, you know what? Not very challenging for me. I'm going to go to Georgetown University, one of the most premier universities in the nation. I'm going to get my undergrad and then press on for my master's, which he did, and then started a company that maps schools and critical infrastructure to keep local communities safe from the active shooter event. So he deserves that award, press on, because he has clearly demonstrated the ability to move through that adversity and become something very important to his community and his country.
Yeah, he continues to serve to this day by doing what he does, you know, and getting into the business that's designed to save people's lives. Right. That's incredible.
So when you ask me what our military is about today, and I talk to guys like Ethan, you know, anything short of standing for those gentlemen is unacceptable to me.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. There's no doubt. Rich, let me ask you this question, and we'll wrap it up. Did the military shape you, mold you, teach you, and turn you into the person you are today? How much of an impact did it have?
Without the military, I can unequivocally say without the military, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in today. And it taught me those very simple but yet important character traits, you know, service before self is a mantra that started in the Air Force and continues. Actually, it's one of our creeds at the Sheriff's Office.
Yes, yeah,
right?
Sure is.
So there's bleed over between the two because it truly is about serving. But your self-discipline, your ability to work in a team environment, all of those things were given to me as gifts. Now, I didn't see them as gifts in basic training, right?
No.
But they're certainly gifts that are ingrained and instilled into you for your whole life. Now, there's some negatives to that too, right? Because I heard you talking to Sammy Bloom and the colonel, and a lot of us, you included, have to have a plan down to the minute, right?
Oh, yeah. We're very organized, very structured, and sometimes that doesn't go well with maybe your other half or other people that don't really understand it.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's only one way to go. It's that way, you know, structured, in line.
Well, we have a certain image we want to uphold, you know, and like Tara, you know, she didn't understand why I didn't want this 9-pound dog. I don't know if I told you.
You're a real tough guy walking that one down the road. I heard some good stories about you walking that dog.
Did I tell you the story about when he got loose?
No, but I can only imagine. Hit me with that one.
Okay, so I'll wrap it up with this. So my wife is all over me. She's a farm girl who's never had a personal pet inside the house. All her dogs have been farm animals.
Right.
Okay? So she wants this dog. And so I try to satisfy her need with the kids by buying her a Roomba.
I got one of those, and that's a good animal to buy.
Right. Well, for the kids, right? And then they can play with it. They could give it a name. But that didn't work out. So she decides she's going to buy a Maltese. You know what a Maltese is? It's a little white furry gremlin looking thing. I think he was 6 pounds when we got him. But she brings him home, and he is adorable.
You know, 6 pounds is less than the turkey you eat at Thanksgiving.
No question.
Like a quarter of it.
No question. So she brings this thing home, and, of course, he's a puppy, so he's chewing on things, and he's escaping, and he's... So I got my tack gear on. I don't want to call it tack gear, but I got my Class D's on because I'm going to the range that day, right? So I got my tack vest.
Well, your flex uniform.
Right, right. And so I'm all geared up. And the dog bolts out the house. No one's home. I can't yell at Logan to go down and chase the dog, right?
Right.
So here's this 6'4", 260-pound guy in full-on tack gear chasing a 6-pound Maltese down the street. And the first lady that pulls up, she asked me if I needed help. You know, if I needed help.
Sir, do you need help?
And I did. I ended up catching him, but, man, I'm scarred. I'm scarred from it, bud.
Yeah. Well, you know, your neighbors are going to look at you different. Your friends are going to look at you different. You know, the 9-pound dog has beat your ass. And I heard that it, you know, yaps a little bit and, you know, cuts up a little bit. Is it getting a little bit better?
Oh, yeah. No, he's great. He's great.
Good. I'm just making sure. And Rich is saying that because he has to go back from the studio to his house at some point. So it's a good thing. Well, Rich, I'd like to wrap things up, and it's been great. You know, we're going to come on and do these podcasts. We really want to focus in on some local stuff. Don't hesitate to just throw out a few suggestions in there. We're going to have a lot of great guests. We're going to have the sheriff on from Lee County, I know soon, and Officer Lindsay McCall from Tempe, Arizona. She was shot 3 times and survived. She just recently retired. She's going to come on and talk to us and give us the whole rundown of the mentality of what it takes to survive. So we have a lot of really good guests,
and then
we have some great local guests as well. But anything to wrap it up with, Rich?
No, bud, I appreciate it. And I've been listening closely to all the podcasts, and there's been some good ones that I got a lot out of. And I do want to take just a quick minute. I know we're running over, but this is important to me. You know, you're one of my best friends, and I know just about everything about you. But I'm listening to your podcast the other day about Pops and Dad and some of the things you're going through with the Alzheimer's. And, man, I think it's important that I tell you how proud I am of you for taking that on. I think it's incredible that you have decided not only to emotionally immerse yourself there, financially, I know it's not easy, but it's what you do, right? Your character is such. And I'm just so proud of you for what you're doing every day with him.
Well, thanks, Rich. That means a lot. You know, I do have a good time with him, so it doesn't feel like a job or doesn't feel like a hassle for me. Every time he does something silly, I kind of laugh, and, you know, we talk a lot, and it's been great. It's been almost 2 years, and, you know, every day we get something different.
He's been great,
but no, I appreciate you.
But keep posting those pictures of him eating the crab legs. Keep planning that trip to Maine in the RV where he's going to get up 19 times and pee and wake you up. Because that's what memories, I mean, that's what you're going to have to hold on to, brother. So keep pressing on, man. I'm so proud of you.
No, I thank you, Rich. It's been great. And we're going to, you know, keep doing what we got to do. And Dad's great. And hope all is well. And we're going to, you know, keep him as safe as we can. But we're going to enjoy life, too.
Absolutely, brother.
Well, I just wanted to thank everybody for listening in. Keep listening to all the episodes. Like them, go on Facebook, share them, give us some ideas. We love it. The feedback has been unbelievable, and we're going to be trying to get out to some different community events. If you need us to come out to a community event, give us a call. We'll do our best to be there. We got some handouts. We got some cool stuff, you know, swag. You know, we really appreciate it. So just wanted to say thanks for listening in. 239 Uncensored, everything Southwest Florida and beyond. Thank you, and we are... out. please make sure to download and listen to us on Apple, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And don't forget to like and share on social media. This has been a 239 Studio production. That was fun.